اللهم كانت من عند السعادة لنزلنا السلقية تكسو سمنة تانزينة تسمعي سوية بينمها سوية تيتاني من بيستم ستكي تانزينة بوتلي سعين بكرامعي عن بداتي سابناتيك وانجا كوبة توبس جاكوي بسند بي بسا بديتنام بابنيه واشنا بنوانوا Yesterday we heard how Chitraketu Maharaj was glorifying Lord Hari, Lord Krishna, Supreme Lord, as the king of Vidyadharas, and he was traveling in his aeroplane doing this in the company of ladies, but glorifying the Lord, and he came upon Lord Shiva, who he saw with Parvati upon his lap. Surrounded by great, great sages. And Chitraketu was surprised that he was acting as if a common man, because in the Vedic culture, the dealings, the more intimate dealings between man and woman, even husband and wife, are not done publicly. So, even though Chitraketu Maharaj understood that Lord Shiva was not a common person, and he was not in any way afflicted by Maya or the modes of material nature, still he was surprised, and he spoke. And he spoke, and Parvati became very upset. And she said, "Oh, now you're so intelligent, even though you're an upstart," she called him. "You're just a devotee. And so many others, great, great souls, such as Lord Brahma and the four Kumaras, they haven't said anything. This must mean that they don't have as much knowledge as you." She spoke very sarcastically, in a critical way. "You know so much. You're so devoted and so full of knowledge that you can criticize someone as exalted as Lord Shiva, while others, having seen the same thing, will not consider it improper, but you'll criticize. So therefore, to teach you, to chastise you, and to teach you, Parvati, like a mother, criticizes her son and chastises her son out of affection. Mother Parvati cursed Chitraketu that you're acting like a demon, someone possessed or controlled by the lower modes of material nature. You're acting in such an arrogant way. Therefore, you shall become a demon in your next life." Now, Prabhupada, in his purports, gave quite a few reasons why this pastime was going on. Foremost was that it was the Lord's desire, because it was due to Parvati's cursing of Chitraketu, that Chitraketu, in his next life, became Vritrasura, whom we heard about at the beginning of the canto. And Vritrasura was killed by Lord Indra, and Vritrasura then went to the lotus feet of Lord Narayan, went back to the spiritual world, to Vaikuntha. So this was ultimately the plan of the Lord, to bring this great soul, Chitraketu, who was now the king of the Vidyadharas, and who was traveling around enjoying himself for so many millions of years, to bring him home to the spiritual world. So that is the ultimate reason. And practically speaking, not a blade of grass moves without the sanction or the will of the Lord. Great devotees see in this way. And therefore, Krishna bhakta nishkama ta eva shanta. Bhakti mukti siddhi kami sakali ashanta. That a devotee, because he has no desires, independent of Krishna's desires. He accepts everything with a full heart that Krishna wants for him. He's serving Krishna outside and inside, externally and within his heart. Therefore, he is always full of peace. Just like a child on the lap of his parent, of his father, is always peaceful, secure. On the other hand, as soon as one has a desire, bhukti, mukti, siddhi, either it's a desire for enjoyment or liberation or mystic powers, such atta-eva, therefore he won't be peaceful, ashanta, because of desire. So a devotee is considered desireless because his only desire is the natural desire of serving the Lord. So Chitraketu, when he was cursed in this way, here's how he reacted. Text 16. Because he was very powerful, actually. He could have counter-cursed poverty. He could have protested. There was no offense. But how did he react? He said, it's your fault, you're doing something. I mean, he could have said, it's your fault, you're doing something improper, and you're in denial, and therefore you're attacking me. Adopted, he could have adopted full victim consciousness. But instead, Prickett Raj was told by Sukadeva Goswami in text 16, when Chitraketu was cursed by poverty, he descended from his airplane. He bowed before her with great humility and pleased her completely. Chitraketu said, my dear mother, with my own hands folded together, I accept the curse upon me. I do not mind the curse, for happiness and distress are given by the demigods as a result of one's past deeds. So what we're going to hear now is very, very important and powerful instructions. How we can live in this world, which is a roller coaster of our karma, with good and bad coming one after another, more or less out of our control. We like to think we're in control. We like to think that if I can manipulate the material world in such a way that I can attain full, unending happiness and remove all distress. But actually, it's impossible. And Chitraketu understood this. The distress and happiness are given by the demigods, he said, as a result of one's past deeds. We have karma, in other words. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. Since Chitraketu was a devotee of the Lord, he was not at all disturbed by the curse of Mother Parvati. Now, how is this possible? Just imagine what one's consciousness would have to be like for one not to be disturbed by a curse that makes one take another birth in a horrible species of life. Prabhupada once asked the devotees, I've mentioned this several times, he was walking by the Pacific Ocean and asked, why was it peaceful Pacific? And because there were no waves. And the devotees didn't reply. And his answer was, because it is deep. And an ocean, even if a great storm is coming, and even if there are great waves, how deep do those waves disturb the ocean? If one goes down a certain distance, one will find that the ocean, regardless of the storm, is very, very, very peaceful and unagitated. It's only on the surface. And that again is because the ocean is deep. Unless one has depth, one will become disturbed by the storms of the material world by the karma that we experience. But if one is deep, on the other hand, deep in his Krishna consciousness, deep in his having taken shelter of Krishna, deep in his devotion, then practically speaking, nothing in the world can disturb him, even something as heavy. There he was the king, and then by his devotion, and he was a great devotee, he was, by the Lord's mercy, given the facility to be a Vidyadhara and still a devotee for millions of years with strong senses, and then cursed to die and take his birth in a demonic family, even tempered because of his depth. He was not at all disturbed by the curse of Mother Parvati. He knew very well that one suffers or enjoys the results of one's past deeds, as ordained by Deva Netra, Daiva Netra, superior authority, or the agents of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He knew that he had not committed any offense at the lotus feet of Lord Shiva or the goddess Parvati, yet he had been punished. And this means that the punishment had been ordained, that it was given by higher powers. Ordained by who? Ordained by Krishna. So if Krishna wants this to happen, or if he allows it to happen, if he sanctions it, the devotee accepts it with folded hands. Thus the king did not mind it. A devotee is naturally so humble and meek that he accepts any condition of life as a blessing from the Lord. That is called surrender. Tateyanukampam susamikshamano bunjane vapatkam, from Lord Brahma. His words in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. A devotee always accepts punishment from anyone as the mercy of the Lord. If one lives in this conception of life, he sees whatever reverses occur to be due to his past misdeeds, and therefore he never accuses anyone. On the contrary, he becomes increasingly attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because of his being purified by his suffering. Suffering, therefore, is also a process of purification. Why does one suffer? Whose fault is it? Why does one get placed in jail, in prison, by the judge? Whose fault is it? Is it the judge's fault? Is it the state's fault? Is it the law's fault? No, it's the individual's fault who broke the law, who acted improperly. So one has to take responsibility for his own actions. And therefore, when something bad happens, when misfortune occurs to someone, if one accepts, yes, this is happening because of my past misdeeds, this is karma. It's not happening to everyone else in the world, it's happening to me. This is due to my karma reacting with the time factor, and therefore I accept it as Krishna's mercy. Means that one accepts that because I am serving Krishna, I'm making my attempt to serve Krishna, Krishna so kindly minimized it. I deserve far worse, and he's minimized it. Or if something good happens, we don't just get joyous, thinking, yes, finally I'm getting what I deserve. No. Rather, one should think, I don't deserve this, but by God's mercy, by Krishna's mercy, he's allowing this to happen. And it's true, because if we have gone through countless births, and those births have accrued to us thousands and billions and unlimited lifetimes worth of karma. So in one birth, maybe we get enough karma to make us, to give us so many hundreds and thousands of births from one birth. So therefore, Krishna by the mercy of the super soul, he awards us a particular karma from the unlimited stock that we have. We get a particular karma. So Krishna actually, or by the laws of nature, which are under Krishna's control, we could get so much worse for all we've done. So by his mercy, we get a token. That is the grace of God. So therefore, by accepting our karma, we accept it, seeing Krishna's mercy in it, and we become purified in that way. So suffering, therefore, is also a process of purification. Of course, it's generally not the most preferred process of purification, but yet it's one that we have to cope with in this world. No one can avoid it. The very nature of the world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam anitya sukhaloka. There is so much unhappiness connected with this world. We hope and dream of a life of only happiness. But it doesn't happen like that, because the very nature of the material world is that it's flickering and changing all the time. So how to deal with reality is the question. In such a way that we become purified and uplifted. So Chitraketu Maharaj is giving us a very wonderful example. A little later Prabhupada writes, "The Lord is very kind and affectionate toward his devotees. And therefore a devotee in any condition is not subjected to the results of karma." That means that ultimately what happens is not exactly the karma, even though our karma may have something to do with it, but it's actually Krishna. Because he's giving us, he is the supervisor of karma. So he takes special, he deals specially with his devotees. A devotee never aspires for the heavenly planets. Okay? A devotee never aspires for the heavenly planets. He doesn't care for the situation that he's in, the external situation, whether it's, and we're going to hear this described in a few verses. Swaga pavaga narakeshu apito yata darshana. Whether he's in heaven or hell or he's liberated, he doesn't care. It's all equal to him. So how deep does one have to be, whether weather is stormy or whether it's very peaceful? He doesn't care, because his consciousness is always fixed on Krishna. He is always relishing the sweetness of his relationship with Krishna. So how wonderful is that? And how unsuperficial is actual devotion? What does superficial mean? On the surface. Superficial means on the surface. So if we are on the surface, if our devotion or our consciousness is on the surface, means what's happening to us externally, then when the storms come, we'll get rough. And then when it's peaceful, when there's no wind, when our karma is relatively peaceful, then we'll say, ah, this is proper, this is right. But the storms and the wind will come. And no one knows when it will come either. So the point being, how glorious is a devotee? How glorious is devotion, devotional service, an awake relationship with Krishna, a deep awake relationship with Krishna, from deep to the level of the soul. How wonderful. The heavenly planets, liberation and hell, are none different for a devotee. For he does not discriminate between different positions in the material world, because he is not in the material world. He's relating with Krishna. A devotee is always eager to return home back to Godhead and remain there as the Lord's associate. This ambition becomes increasingly fervent in his heart. That means with increasingly strength of desire. He wants that. He wants to be with Krishna. He wants to be in Goloka Vrindavan, serving Krishna, associating with Krishna and Krishna's servants. That's his fervent desire. That's like sometimes when we're thinking something very, very fervently and deeply. Sometimes we may be very angry, or sometimes we may be really happy, or just thoughtful in another reason. And we forget, practically speaking, where we are. We might bump into things when we're absorbed in something else. So the trick is to be so absorbed in the desire to be with Krishna, to serve Krishna, and to love Krishna, to have that taste, to have that faith, that practically speaking, we won't be in the material world, even though it may appear to be in the material world. Therefore, great devotees like Srila Prabhupada and the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they are considered to have lotus feet, because as the lotus is above the water, although it appears to be in the water, similarly, the great devotees are not touched by the material world, although they appear to be in the material world. So we should aspire to be such great devotees. Not that we want to be great devotees in that sense, but we should desire to have that fervent desire to be with Krishna. And that's what it means to be a great devotee. Surrendered to Krishna. That's his desire, very fervently. That's his care. Tatraloyam ekamulam apimuyam mulam ekalam. Vyavyasatmika buddhi, fixed in consciousness, not bahushaka, many branched in consciousness. I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that, I want that. I just want to serve and love Krishna and be with Krishna. This ambition becomes increasingly fervent in his heart, and therefore he does not care about material changes in his life. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments that Maharaj Chitraketu's being cursed by poverty should be considered the mercy of the Lord. The Lord wanted Chitraketu to return to Godhead as soon as possible, and therefore he terminated all the reactions of his past deeds. Acting through the heart of poverty, the Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart, cursed Chitraketu in order to end all his material reactions. Thus Chitraketu became Vitrasura in his next life and returned home back to Godhead. So even if there is an external cause to some suffering that we may have, yet Krishna has sanctioned it or inspired that person or that event to happen. So who to blame? Now Chitraketu Maharaj is going to speak a little more. So he accepted the curse. This is my karma. Deluded by ignorance, text 18, the living entity wanders in the forest of this material world, enjoying the happiness and distress resulting from his past deeds, everywhere and at all times. All our circumstances, every one of them, are due to our karma, the good and the bad. And we're wandering in the forest of the material world. Therefore, my dear mother, neither you nor I am to be blamed for this incident. So whose fault is it? Parvati's fault, because she cursed the devotee. She shouldn't have cursed the devotee. Chitraketu's fault. He shouldn't have been speaking in that way. Lord Shiva's fault. He shouldn't be sitting with Parvati in that way. Actually, it's nobody's fault. And ultimately, it's not Krishna's fault, but it's Krishna's doing for our welfare. This was discussed in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, when the Kali was beating Dharma the bull. And Maharaj Prakrit asked, who's beating you? And the sagacious bull answered very wisely, If I say he's doing it to me, therefore I'm entangled in the consciousness that makes him the doer, and I'm just as guilty as him because I've done something. By naming the doer, I'm implicated in the reactions too. And then I'll have to get him back and take a next birth to beat him, to get even. So I'm implicated also. So therefore, who can say who's doing it? And in Prabhupada's purport, he said, this is not actually correct. Even though on some level, on a one level of dharma, it is of religiosity, it is correct. But Prabhupada said, no, it's not actually correct. Speaking from the higher, ultimate level, he said, ultimately, Krishna is the doer. So when we get beaten by a stick, behind every stick there's a hand that's holding the stick, but behind that hand is Krishna that's allowing it to happen, and even on one level inspiring it, because no one can do anything without the inspiration from Krishna. So many purposes are fulfilled by one act. Many purposes. And of course this doesn't mean that we can hit someone with a stick and say, I didn't do it, the stick did it, or Krishna made me do it, or the devil made me do it, or go through a whole long list of why, don't be angry at me, what did I do? If I say I'm doing anything in this world, I'm an illusion. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, kartaham timanyate hankaravamudama. No, there's many different levels of action. But the ultimate level is this one, that Krishna's hand is in everything. Prabhupada's purport, when he says, my dear mother, neither you nor I am to be blamed for this incident, Prabhupada's purport. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 3:27, Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunai Kamani Savasar Hankara Vimudatma Karta Hamiti Manyate. The bewildered soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. Actually, a conditioned soul is completely under the control of material nature. Wandering here and there, always and everywhere, he is subjected to the results of his past deeds. This is carried out by the laws of nature. One foolishly thinks himself the doer, which in fact he is not. To get free from this karmic chakra, the wheel of the results of one's karma, one should take to bhakti marg, devotional service, or Krishna consciousness. That is the only remedy. Sarvadamam pratyajam amikam sharanam braja. One should surrender to Krishna, and part of that surrender is accepting reality as it is. And whatever circumstance we are in, by our karma, a combination of our karma and ultimately Krishna's mercy, we should try to serve Krishna in that situation. Try to understand what his desire is and serve him. And that consciousness of thinking always, how can I please Krishna, is called Bhagavad Dharma. We've already heard about this so many times in this canto. Chitraketu Maharaj continues. In this material world, neither the living entity himself, nor others, his friends and enemies, are the cause of material happiness and distress. But because of gross ignorance, the living entity thinks that he and others are the cause. So yes, others are the cause, like the stick is the cause. When we're getting hit by the stick is the cause in one sense, but it's not the ultimate cause. There is a power behind the stick that's making the stick to act in a particular way. So the friends, superficially, may be the instrument, the instrumental cause for something. Or we may be an instrumental cause, but we're an instrument of something else. We're instrument of the laws of the modes of material nature. And the those material modes are instrument in the hands of Krishna, who is the ultimate doer, the sarva-karana karanam, the cause of all causes. So this consciousness is very, very wonderful that Chitraketu Maharaj is describing here, and he's acting. Very wonderful, but it's deep. It is not superficial. Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the word agya is very significant. In the material world, all living entities are agya. So gya or gyan means knowledge, and agya means no knowledge or ignorant. So all living entities are agya, ignorant in different degrees. This ignorance continues very strongly in the mode of ignorance presented by material nature. One must therefore promote himself to the stage of goodness through his character and behavior, and then gradually come to the transcendental platform, or dhokchaja platform, in which he realizes both his position and the position of others. So the opposite of ignorance is knowledge. So this is knowledge about how the material world is working. Everything is done under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The process by which the results of action are ordained is called niyatam, always working. Text 20. Chitraketu Maharaj continues. This material world resembles the waves of a constantly flowing river. Therefore, what is a curse and what is a favor? What are the heavenly planets and what are the hellish planets? What is actually happiness and what is actually distress? Because the waves flow constantly, none of them has an eternal effect. So when the wave of the river is going, sometimes if there can be a piece of wood that's above the water, and then sometime very quickly it gets thrown below the water, and then it's up, and then it's swirling, and then it's up, and then it's down. That's what the material world is like. And sometimes in the river it comes to a very peaceful section that's very wide, and then a little further down it's the rapids and the white water and the churning of the waves of the river and the rocks that it's banging into. And sometimes there's a waterfall and a great plunge. That's what life is like. Unavoidable. Everyone's journey down the river of life isn't going to be the same, because we all have different karma. But yet everyone has to go over these periods. And unless we're deep, When we're in the peaceful part, how wonderful. And then when it's in the rough part, oh no, torture, we feel tortured. But if we're deep in our Krishna consciousness, then these things actually don't touch us. And this is niyatam, always working. Is continuously going on, and the escape, as Prabhupada has said, is sabadaman pratyasa. Mame kamsharanam pratyasa. The material, here's Prabhupada's purport to this. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Mitche mayaravashe yachabeshe katcha habuduvai. My dear living entities within this material world, why are you being carried away by the waves of the modes of material nature? Jiva Krishna Das Evishvas Karle Ta Aradukanai. If the living entity tries to understand that he is an eternal servant of Krishna, and Vishvas, with great faith he accepts this, then there will no longer be misery for him. Krishna wants us to give up all other engagements and surrender unto him. If we do so, where will be the cause and effect of this material world? Where will the cause and effect of the material world be? There is nothing like cause and effect for the surrendered soul. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in this regard that being put into this material world is like being thrown into a mine of salt. If one falls into a mine of salt, he tastes only salt wherever he goes. Similarly, this material world is full of miseries. The so-called temporary happiness of the world is also misery. But in ignorance, we cannot understand this. That is the actual position. When one comes to his senses, when he becomes Krishna conscious, he is no longer concerned with the various conditions of this material world. He is not concerned with happiness or distress, curses or favors, or heavenly or hellish planets. He sees no distinction between them. It's like, I can't remember, I was on some plane and there was a movie on, and you could see it was one of those Indiana Jones type of movies where it's, you know, really fast. One thing happens right after the next, one after the next, one after the next, one thing after another. So one minute something's attacking him, and the next minute, and he's somehow freed from that. And the next minute, something else attacks him. He's in a dangerous position. And then he's falling off a cliff. And then something else attacks him. Then he's running in this way. And it's very dangerous. And then gradually you catch on that nothing's actually going to happen to him. Because it's one thing after another. So at first, when you start, I get an anxiety in these things. I'm so silly. I get in so much anxiety. What's going to happen? Because that's actually the theory of movies. It actually comes from originally from Vedic literature. It does. Because this is called the theory of rasa, rasa shastra. Is that you have to build it when there's the hero or the heroine, there has to be an identification built up. For the person watching the drama or the movie or reading the book, and that hero or heroine, if there's no identification built up, then the reader doesn't experience, or the viewer doesn't experience anything. But if there's an identification built up between the person watching it and the hero on the screen, then you experience vicariously everything that he experiences. So there I am, foolish Parishioner, right? Looking at this thing and feeling all the anxiety and this calamity. Oh no, no, and so. And then after a while, as I said, you realize that nothing's going to happen at all. And then, of course, you say, anyway, this is a movie. What am I doing? This is crazy. But that's what it's like, one thing after another. But if we break the identification with the star of the show, me, you know, this body and this particular karma, this episode that's going on, you know, phase one, you like to have all the sequels, Rocky 1, Rocky 2, Rocky 3, whatever it was. So, you know, Burijan stage 1, stage 2, you know, and there's different moods and different likes and dislikes in each stage, and different dramas and different excitements and different loves and hates and friends and enemies and allies and etc. And if we break that of identification with this external and just identify as I'm Krishna's throughout all these. So whatever the externals happen, whatever the movie that happens to be imposed upon me due to my karma, if I can just focus my consciousness on reality, who I am through all these different changes of karma, then I'm Krishna's servant. And I should serve him. Then immediately there's no misery. There's no material happiness. There's no misery. So therefore Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Dukho nai. When if you, Jeev Krishna Das, Avishwas, if we accept with faith that we're Krishna's servant, Karle, if we do this, no more dukkha nai, no more misery. Break the identification with matter and open the identification with being Krishna's servant. So if the living entity tries to understand that he is an eternal servant of Krishna, there will no longer be misery for him. Krishna wants us to give up all other engagements and surrender to him. If we do so, where will be the cause and effect of the material world? There is nothing like cause and effect. It's like being in the salt mine, Bishop Chakravarti Thakur says. The so-called temporary happiness of this world is also misery. But in ignorance, we cannot understand this. That is the actual position. When one comes to his senses, when he becomes Krishna conscious, he is no longer concerned with the various conditions of this material world. The movie is recognized for what it is. It's an illusion. It's a movie. It's temporary. It's karma. He is not concerned with happiness and distress, curses or favors, or heaven or hellish plans. He sees no distinction between them. It's got nothing to do with him. It's just external. This is just the... Now, how can I serve Krishna in these circumstances? Is that what concerns? 21. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is one. Unaffected by the conditions of the material world, he creates all the conditioned souls by his own personal potency. Because of being contaminated by the material energy, the living entity is put into ignorance and thus into different conditions of bondage. Sometimes by knowledge, the living entity is given liberation. In sattva-gun and rajagun, he is subjected to happiness and distress. Prabhupada's purport. The question may be raised why the living entities are situated in different conditions. And who has arranged this? Is there some cosmic sadist? The great cosmic sadist in the sky who's controlling everything and giving everyone so much misery, causing all the war and the diseases and this and that? Who has arranged this? The answer is that it has been done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead without anyone's help. The Lord has His own energies, prasya shaktiya vividaiva shriyate, and one of them, namely the external energy, creates the material world and the varieties of happiness and distress for the conditioned souls under the supervision of the Lord. The material world consists of three modes of material nature, sattva-gun, goodness, rajagun, passion, and tamagun, ignorance. By sattva-gun, the Lord maintains the material world. By rajagun, passion, He creates it. And by tamagun, ignorance, He annihilates it. After the varieties of living entities are created, they are subject to happiness and distress according to their association with the modes. When they're in sattva-gun, the mode of goodness, they feel happiness. When in rajagun, they are distressed. And when in tamagun, they have no sense of what to do or what is right or wrong. So being controlled at every moment, that is the point. But it's purposeful so that we can get out. And that is Krishna's plan behind the material world. Text 22. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is equally disposed towards all living entities. Again, this is Chitraketu Maharaj speaking and explaining his point of view and how he's able to be so detached. So the Lord is equally disposed towards all living entities. Therefore, no one is dear to him, very dear to him, and no one is a great enemy for him. No one is his friend and no one is his relative. Being unattached to the material world, he has no affection for so-called happiness or hatred for the so-called distress. The two terms, happiness and distress, are relative. Since the Lord is always happy, for him there is no question of distress. So this is describing the Lord as the controller of the material world, the neutral controller, the judge. That's one aspect of the Lord, is the Paramatma. But ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maya teteshu chapyaham. But a different aspect is how he deals with his devotees. He's neutral. Samoham savabhuteshu name dveshos tinapriya. For every living entity in the material world, he just gives the law. You've done this, here's the law, boom, this karma. Good, bad, neutral. But for the devotees who are fully surrendered to him, they are specially under his care. Although the Supreme Lord is unattached to our happiness and distress according to karma, And although no one is his enemy or friend, he creates pious and impious activities through the agency of the material potency. Thus, for the continuation of the materialistic way of life, he creates happiness and distress, good fortune and bad, bondage and liberation, birth and death. So people want to continue in material life, so therefore he has a system for them to fulfill their desires, the good and the bad. This is the system. But when one wants to get out of the material world, he is out of the system. If one decides, I don't want any more of this trying to be the enjoyer, imagining I'm the center of everything. When one actually makes that determination, and even once calls out to Krishna and says, Krishna, I'm yours, then he is taken out of that category in which the material nature treats him neutrally and placed under Krishna's personal care. Prabhupada's purport. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate doer of everything, in his original transcendental existence, he is not responsible for the happiness and distress or bondage and liberation of the conditioned souls. These are due to the results of the fruitive activities of the living entities within this material world. By the order of a judge, one person is released from jail and another is imprisoned, but the judge is not responsible, for the distress and happiness of these different people is due to their own activities. Though the government is ultimately the supreme authority, the justice, similarly, the Supreme Lord is neutral to everyone, but for the maintenance of law and order, his supreme government has various departments which control the activities of the living entities. Another example given in this regard is that lilies open or close because of the sunshine, and thus the bumblebees enjoy or suffer. But the sunshine and the sun globe are not responsible for the happiness and distress of the bumblebees. O Mother, Chitraketu says, you are now unnecessarily angry. But since all my happiness and distress are destined by my past activities, I do not plead to be excused or relieved from your curse. Although what I have said is not wrong, please let whatever you think is wrong be pardoned. So ultimately he said, please forgive me. Even though I've done nothing wrong, you please forgive me for what you think is wrong. I'll accept your judgment. Purport. Being fully aware of how the results of one's karma accrue by the laws of nature, Chitraketu did not want to be released from poverty's curse. He wanted Krishna's will to be done. Nonetheless, he wanted to satisfy her because although his verdict was natural, she was displeased with him. As a matter of course, Maharaj Chitraketu begged pardon from poverty. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
It seems like Chitraketu in Maharaj has answered without conceding that there was anything wrong in what he said, but just so he kind of accept that it has come.
Yes.
So, from what perspective would he be saying that there was nothing wrong with it?
Because he didn't mean, he didn't have any, there was no offensiveness in his mentality. There was no malice, there was no enmity, not like Daksha, who was actually offensive to Lord Shiva. He was just, as Prabhupada explained, from that point of view in his purport, he didn't want others to criticize Lord Shiva or follow Lord Shiva's example like that. So he was speaking in that way. That comes out a little bit later, and tomorrow, if Krishna allows, that comes out. There's one purport where Prabhupada explains that he accepted it with a full heart, seeing as Krishna's. Just like sometimes we'll say, a devotee says, sometimes we do something and unintentionally disturb another. We didn't do anything wrong really, but someone gets disturbed by what we've done. So then how do you deal with that person? you haven't done anything wrong from your point of view, but from the other point of view you have, from the person's point of view you disturb, you have. So the humble Vaishnava way to deal with it is like Klipta Keti Maharaj, saying, from my point of view, I didn't do anything wrong, but I've obviously disturbed you. You please forgive me. If you pardon me, I'll accept whatever punishment you say I deserve. Okay, no problem. Please forgive me. I didn't mean to cause you any trouble.
The danger, doesn't apply in this case, but the danger there is that one assumes that I didn't really do anything wrong and was going to accept punishment, but maybe that one needs to look deeper whether one did.
Or you say, please explain to me how I disturbed you. And very often when that happens, you can see that the disturbance was, it comes out, you've done this and this and this. Oh, I didn't know I did that.
Yeah.
It comes out it was unintentional, but you stepped on someone's toe unintentionally, and you caused them pain, and the pain is real, but it was unintentional. And when they understand that it just happened, then they can say it's just karma, and you can say it's just karma. Life goes on. It lightens it. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Yes. So a great devotee should learn to be follow Krishna's example of being neutral. Is that whether someone is a friend or an enemy? Should always treat them in a neutral state of mind, is that?
On the devotee should be friendly to everyone, regardless of, on the material level, neutral. Because when we're friendly to someone on the material level, it's not true friendship. It's they're giving us something, they're making us happy in some way. So we're still the center. So detached on that level and still being a true friend to others by trying to serve them in a spiritual sense and with amongst the devotees, we're supposed to call each other Prabhu or Master, and thinking each other as you're the Master and I'm the servant on the spiritual level. Let me somehow help you, assist you so you can advance in your love for Krishna. And if everyone is thinking in such a humble way as a servant, then everything is very smooth. So this doesn't mean that we should be neutral to everyone that we see, because even if we're detached on the material level, society and external life dictates a certain type of activity. Just like if there's an elderly lady walking across the road, we could think, you're not elderly, you're a soul, and I should be neutral. Or someone gets hit by a car, we think, oh, I should be neutral, you're not your body. But this isn't actually the practical application of the philosophy. So there's two things. There's the theory, and then there's the practical application of the theory. So if we try to act theoretically without really having the depth of understanding of how to apply it practically, we end up causing so much trouble. So we have to know how to act practically, how to apply the principle in a practical way, in a way that, on one hand, consistent with our true depth of our realization as it truly is, because otherwise we'll act neutrally to everyone. When we're in a bad mood, we won't acknowledge anyone. Then when we're in a different mood, we'll act completely differently, and our moods will change every day. So we have to act consistently with the depth of our own realization, and secondly, we have to deal in the world in a practical way, according to what the world demands. Even though, if we're very, very advanced, we may not be seeing on the level that the world is demanding, but still we have to, generally speaking, we act on that level. Follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's more acceptance of that circumstance.
You certainly have to, because I read one time in some book, I can't remember what book it was, but someone said, "I accept reality." And the reply was, "Well, you better." Big deal, you accept it. The truck's gonna run you over if you don't accept it. You have to accept reality. You can't avoid reality. So one has to accept it. So the question is how to respond to the external reality, which is very much connected to our karma. How to respond to it with proper consciousness. So what is the proper consciousness of response? That is the real question. We can't change reality. The very nature of reality is it's there. We can't change it. But how to respond to it with the proper consciousness, that's what we have to try to do. What we're trying to learn is the Krishna conscious way to respond. But yet we can't imitate Chitraketu either. That was part of what I was saying. Try to be neutral towards everyone. That means not only being neutral to the people that you have affection for, but being neutral to the people that you hate. Try. See how long you last. You can't, because we're superficial in the depth. So we should understand who we are and how to practically act. Because if we don't make the distinction between the theory and the practice, the practical application according to who we are and what the circumstances are, we end up being very frustrated and we end up frustrating others. Any other? Yes.
When we try and be friendly in our dealings with everyone in a material way, how then can we learn to distinguish or discriminate in the spiritual way for the ways that may not have enough knowledge in the beginning?
How do we?
Well, we've got to practice being friendly.
Yeah. It's not different, it's just deeper. Prabhupada was once asked, how will you recognize, what will be the distinguishing characteristics of your disciples, devotees? And he said, they will be gentlemen, or gentle ladies. So that's a basic principle. We should be whether we're very, very, very deep spiritually and we're seeing Krishna in everyone's heart, or we're just struggling along, that principle will be applicable. We should be gentlemen and gentle ladies.
I guess I mean more in terms of taking association from the people. How to discriminate on that level.
We should take association with devotees as much as we can, especially advanced devotees. And we should be kind to people in general. And since if we don't know what to do, we can ask Krishna to help us. And if we can't hear him, we should just use our common sense. Act nice. Act in the mode of goodness. The general way a devotee acts is in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada told me that the first question I asked him, that's how I responded. He said, generally a devotee acts in the mode of goodness. So how does a good person act? So that's how we can think. If I was a good person, how would I act? And then act that way, and then we'll be good people. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada.